everyone. I'm Jennifer with Michelle Marketing Strategies, where I specialize in helping healthcare IT and provider organizations to get more leads. Today on Healthcare Lead Generation, we are talking with the amazing Linda Leakley of In the Know Caregiver Training. You can find her at knowingmore.com. Now, Linda is the founder and CEO of In the Know. She recognized there was a void when it came to training options for direct care workers. That was back in 98. And she decided to blend her nursing experience in acute and post-acute care with her years as a clinical educator, and her company, In the Know, was the result. Her passion for caregiver education makes In the Know the leader in professionally prepared caregiver training. Linda, welcome. I'm so delighted to have you on the podcast.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Jennifer. It's a real pleasure to speak with you today.
Thank you, Linda. What I am really interested in is talking about this world of caregivers. I think that it's one of those things that most families eventually wind up dealing with. Either a member of their family needs to be a caregiver, or a member of the family goes into caregiving, or needs to have a caregiver, goes into caregiving. But there really isn't enough information out there. I don't think most people realize what's going on in that world or how it works, or what the career path is, or the training. So I am delighted to have you on the show to help enlighten everyone. So why don't we start with a background orientation of what is going on in the world of caregiving right now?
Oh, sure. Yeah, you know, the hottest topic really is that we have a caregiver shortage. The Bureau of Labor Statistics, for example, says that by 2024, we're going to need 1 million new caregivers across the country. The Wall Street Journal, they're even gloomier about it. They say it could be up to 3 million.
And this is on top of what is already a chronically understaffed situation now, correct?
That's right.
Wow.
And, you know, typically the shortage tends to be blamed on baby boomers like myself. there are roughly 10,000 of us turning 65 every day. And most of us would prefer to age at home rather than at a facility. Yeah. So for many, this means at some point needing to hire a caregiver. And so the experts tend to say that there just aren't enough people available to care for the aging population.
Now, to be clear, are we talking, we're talking the whole range, aren't we? People who do caregiving part-time, we're talking about live-in health. There's a whole range there, correct?
There is a whole range. That does not include family caregivers. So that, for example, if you were to quit your job to care for an elderly relative, that's not counted in that number. That's a different scenario.
Okay.
So these are paid caregivers.
Understood. So let's talk about what that world is like. Let's get a sense of, how many, I know you've told me that there are a lot of competition for the people who go into caregiving, and it's not all from other caregiving positions. So what is the frame of reference here?
Well, you're right. It's a career that has a tough time attracting a lot of people. It can be really backbreaking, heartbreaking, spirit-breaking work. And these employees are, they receive little training. They can get going on the job, with a couple of weeks training. In some states, for a non-medical caregiver, there's no training requirement at all. Mm-hmm. And they get little recognition and little appreciation for the work they do. So really, it's not so much a shortage of people available, it's people wanting to get into the career.
So they're competing with jobs that are not even in caregiving.
That's right. Hospitality, food service, retail, like Amazon, for instance, just recently announced that their minimum wage is going to be $15 for any position, any location. Mm-hmm. And that's and then they also include benefits. And so it's, that's a tough thing to compete against.
And what is the average pay right now for caregivers?
About $10.50.
Yeah, so that is a big difference.
Yeah.
So why are people drawn to it? Maybe that's a very interesting point to consider.
They have done surveys about that, and the ones that I've seen consistently, the majority of people, like the vast majority of people answering these surveys, 60 to 70%, say that they get into it because they want to help other people. And so I think, you know, it tends to be one of those things, you know, not dissimilar to nursing, really, where, you know, they feel a real calling for the work.
Do people feel that it's a preparatory step for going into nursing, or is it seen as its own career path?
Both. In fact, there's a number of nursing schools across the country now that require students to work as a caregiver for up to a year prior to being accepted into the nursing program.
Interesting.
Yeah, you know, as a nurse myself, I think that's a really great thing to do. It, you know, it gives the person a taste of the healthcare world before they commit to nursing school. And if they do decide to go through with becoming a nurse, they will forever have respect for the work that their caregiver colleagues do.
Absolutely.
Which is so important.
I also think it helps so much to orient you when you see how people live when they're ill. Because if you've never seen it, and very often people going into nursing are young, they're starting their career,
That's right.
All of them, but many of them. So they might not have seen it if they didn't have an elderly grandparent or a sick, you know, relative in their family. And as an EMT, that's one of the things that always jumps out as me is things you didn't really think about, you see right up close, and then you get it. And I think that's profoundly impactful if you are going into any medical field at any level. So
I agree completely.
So and, go ahead.
Say that, you know, the pay is a, you know, it's a big topic. And if you ask a lot of people, so they just say, well, let's pay them more. And I don't disagree. They're definitely worth more. However, the organizations that hire them are often handcuffed by government reimbursement. If they deal with Medicare or Medicaid patients, you know, they're only reimbursed X amount from the government. And in order to stay in business, they really can't pay the caregivers more. So that's really a shame. And in fact, it means that more than half of all caregivers in the U.S. live below the poverty line.
And I'm guessing that means they then juggle multiple jobs as well as their families.
They do.
Which makes it even harder.
It does make it harder. Caregivers are often hired on as part-time employees. Sometimes that's to avoid giving them benefits, which is also a shame. But yes, so they're juggling several jobs as well as you say, their families.
And when you mentioned the Medicaid and Medicare situation, are there lobbyists that are working to promote caregivers' needs?
Yes, there are. There's a organization, PHI, and now I'm trying to think of what that stands for.
Okay, but it's PHI. That's good.
PHI.org, and they have worked for years to help with the caregiver shortage and getting them the respect and benefits they deserve and higher pay. And yeah, so that's a great organization.
Well, let's talk more about making that change to a different paradigm. You talk about it not being reimbursed at a higher rate, not being paid at a higher rate, not necessarily getting benefits. I know that you think that there needs to be a paradigm shift there in thinking about it as a respected career path. So let's talk about what would go into that, because I agree with you. We have to start valuing the things that we need. It's not just the things that we can't have. I mean, everyone values, you know, the rarest diamond in the world, but do we value, you know, the water all around us or the air all around us? I mean, that's the thing that we really need. And I think caregiving falls into the same category.
It totally does. And most people, or many people, may not know that caregivers provide 90% of the hands-on care.
Wow.
To patients. So, you know, if your loved one's in the hospital, 90% of the time, the attention paid to them is by a caregiver, not a nurse, not a doctor, not a therapist, but the caregiver. And yet, if you ask the general public, you know, their impression of what a caregiver does, many are going to say, well, they deal with bedpans, they give baths to grumpy old people all day, and they're basically glorified maids.
Yikes.
And to me, that sort of thinking should offend all of us because, like I said, they are serving the sick, disabled, elderly in a holistic manner. They deal with their physical needs, emotional, social needs, and 90% of the care is given by them. They really deserve respect, appreciation, and admiration for what they do.
Absolutely. Especially when you tell me that 60 to 70% of them want to do it just to help other people. They absolutely deserve that respect.
That's right. So yes, I mean, to try to shift that paradigm and help make caregiving a respected career, you know, ideas such as developing a mentorship program, offering a career ladder, holding regular skills fairs, reimbursing tuition for advanced training at a community college. Now, what all these ideas have in common is training.
And that's what you know. So let's talk about that. That's a big, important issue. And I suspect it's something people in this field want. I mean, people who care about what they're doing want to do it very well. And it sounds like these people are very dedicated.
They are. And they do want to continue learning. You know, obviously, because I run a training company, this is near and dear to my heart. But
there's a real need out there.
There is. And it's interesting. When I talk to healthcare administrators, the conversation usually goes one of two ways. Okay. They either say, oh, gee, you know, people say training is important, but I think it's a waste of time. It's a waste of money. If when I offer training courses, my caregivers don't even bother to complete them. Or I hear, oh, yeah, training is the key to keeping great employees. My caregivers always want to learn something new and our patients reap the benefits.
Those are two real different worlds.
It is totally. And it just seems to be either one extreme or the other. And what I often think about is that old adage, the only thing worse than training employees and having them leave is not training and having them stay.
Exactly. That's true in every field. You can either have a very competent workforce that eventually moves on, or you can be stuck with completely incompetent people.
That's right.
That's your choice as the leader. It's not the choice of the people you're hiring. So
that's right. And so I think, you know, an administrator's vision of training and belief about training trickles down. So mm-hmm. if they're negative about it, you know, that's going to trickle down.
And it isn't just in caregiving that we're seeing this in our whole economy right now. We have seen a huge shift, and we're seeing the problems that it comes to, where everybody wants to hire people who are already ready to go, even in the most unique, specialized aspects of coding or anything. And it makes no sense. Hire people with the capabilities of doing that and train them to exactly what you need and let them grow with your company. But that thinking, I think it's going to resurface in the next 5 years, but it has gone underground for far too long. Yeah.
No, definitely. I mean, we tell people that all the time, to sort of hire for character.
Absolutely.
And train for skill, you know.
So let's talk about the kinds of training that people are interested in and how you provide that to them and what are the things that they're looking for.
Well, there's initial training, which is just like everything else in this country. That's state by state regulations. So that can be fairly complex. And it's also dependent on, is it a non-medical caregiver? Is it a home health aide? Is it a certified nursing assistant? Personal care aide? These all have different regulations. So you have, you know, four or five different kind of caregivers in 50 states, all those bureaucratic regulations.
Oh, I bet that's crazy.
Yeah. So the initial training can be tricky, but it's obviously crucial. And then there's ongoing training. And those regulations also vary. Federal regulations require 12 hours of continuing education per year for any caregiver who works with a government program like Medicare or Medicaid.
Okay.
And then the states vary widely. Some require no continuing education. And just think about it. You've got a caregiver who's had maybe 2 weeks of training, and they are put out in someone's home to work all by themselves and then never have another continuing education class. It makes no sense.
It's isolating, and you can see how it might not make them feel as committed to their work, because it feels, you know, where are they going to go? They're not learning the new things
That's right.
How do they prefer to learn? Is it online? Do they prefer courses? What is the best connection that you found?
We really encourage a blended learning program where you do use online training, because let's face it, that's what's going to attract the younger generations, that, you know, born with a phone or a computer. You know?
Absolutely. It's much more convenient in general.
It is. I mean, our courses can be completed on a phone or an iPad or you know, any kind of tablet or a computer. So yes, e-learning is definitely, it's revolutionized caregiver training, but that doesn't mean that classroom learning is obsolete, excuse me. Mm-hmm. I think that getting caregivers together as a group is crucial, especially for the ones that work in clients' homes. Like I said, they work alone day after day. They don't get much chance to hang out with their coworkers. So when an administrator has some group, that's a perfect opportunity for teaching by and recognizing caregivers in front of their peers.
Absolutely. What are the training topics that are most requested beyond the initial requirements?
You know, caregivers want to learn. We did a poll actually recently, and the most in-demand topics had to do with dementia and memory care.
Oh, I bet.
You know, that's not surprising, really.
And it's such a fascinating area. And I don't know that much about it, but what I've read has always made me amazed at how a different approach to it, not different treatment, but a different way of working with patients who are dealing with dementia, makes everything better for them and therefore makes it also easier on the caregiver. So I can see why training on that would be tremendously helpful.
That's right. And, you know, we really encourage organizations to look at the population of their clients, their residents, and pick a couple of key diagnoses, and then become the experts in their market by offering their caregivers advanced training in that topic. So, for example, you know, ABC Home Care finds that they serve a lot of diabetic clients. If they train all their caregivers with an advanced training program, which many companies have, we have one, and so they create diabetes specialists, and then they market that training program to the public and to referral sources and ads for caregivers.
That's brilliant.
Diabetes specialist, and you know, when they have these advanced training programs and they market their organization that way, they become the specialist to the referral sources. So anytime, you know, a hospital is discharging a diabetic client and they need somebody, they go, oh yeah, I'm going to go with ABC Home Care.
Oh, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. I love that. You know, I'm in marketing. I love that. I love a good niche when I see that.
Yes, exactly.
I can see why that would just be a brilliant approach. Let's talk more about some of the other support services to caregivers. I know that you had mentioned when we were originally arranging this, you know, podcast episode, was that part of that paradigm shift that you've spoken about is trying to make it easy on the caregiver. So there are support services that make doing their work easier. Can you talk about what those would be?
Sure. Really, I think that the caregiver's needs need to be looked at holistically, just the same that we look at patients, and then strive to meet the needs that keep them from sticking with the profession. For example, many caregivers will quit their jobs because of their own family responsibilities, like taking care of their kids.
Right.
So how about an organization partnering with a local daycare center? Many child care operators now offer corporate partnerships. They offer tuition subsidies, preferred pricing, backup child care. So having a perk like that can really set an organization apart from the rest. And, you know, think of the recruiting possibilities if you're advertising that you assist with child care.
I think that's so helpful. And you're right. It totally ties into everything we talk about for patients regarding social determinants of health. But it's not just patients who need that. Anyone who's working needs that, and caregivers especially, since they're often not making enough to handle daycare as smoothly as someone who's, you know, in an executive position.
That's right.
So a bus pass for them can make a big difference.
It can. And, you know, many organizations aren't aware that they can subsidize their caregivers' transportation or their employee transportation by offering vouchers and bus passes. The IRS allows an employer to pay for employees' qualified transit up to $255 a month per employee. And that could be vanpooling, bus, rail, ferry services if you're living on an island. you know, and then there's Uber for Business. They can get some special rates from Uber to provide affordable rides for employees in emergency situations if they need, you know, coverage for a case or what have you. So, and I think the thing is just thinking outside the box.
And talking with them, asking what they might need.
Exactly. Ask what they need. You know, in because of the lifting that caregivers do every day, nurse aides, and not many people know this, they have a higher rate of on-the-job injury than any other profession.
Wow.
More than construction workers, more than police officers, more than anybody. On an average day, a caregiver lifts about 2,000 pounds.
Wow.
And so they are really prone for injury. So in Arizona, there was an organization that asked the caregivers asked their employer to help pay for group Pilates and yoga classes for the staff so that they could strengthen their core to avoid injuries. And it worked.
Oh, I love that. I love that idea.
So, yeah, I mean, so that's, you know, another way of thinking outside the box. Do your caregivers need food stamps or other social services? You know, if they're in need of public assistance, help them. You know, in other words, take away the obstacles that are keeping them from being successful on the job. And like you say, ask them what they need and then follow through.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I hope we start seeing more of that as a trend in the coming years because it is so important. Let's talk about that. What is coming down the pike? I know there are different things being discussed to address the caregiver shortage, but let's talk about some of the issues going on there and what are some approaches people are taking?
Well, you know, is to sort of cast a wide net over the generations. You know, for the first time in history, there are five generations in our workforce. And there's people who were born before 1945 who are working as caregivers, seniors caring for seniors.
Wow.
And then there's the baby boomers. There, plenty of them are still working. The average age of a caregiver is about 45. So I guess that puts them in the Gen Xers.
Yep.
And then there's millennials, and then the kids who are the Generation Z who are just now entering the workforce. So, you know, the hiring population or possibilities rather are really unlimited. You can some organizations are trying to get people who are newly retired and interested in career involved in caregiving. excuse me. They certainly tackle high schools and
all different ranges.
Excuse me. excuse me. A little frog in my throat.
It's okay.
Try to get the younger people involved. But to do that, they really have to be open. The organization has to be open to fresh new ideas and to the ever-evolving use of technology. And having a career ladder for caregivers. That's really crucial to attract young people. They don't want to feel like they're entering a dead-end job.
No. And who would? You can't blame them for that. Of course, they want something where they can go. They have their futures to plan as well. One thing you had mentioned to me previously was that 25%, I think you said, of caregivers in the U.S. are immigrants. So what does that do for the future of it, for the mix, or what people are doing to try and get more caregivers?
Well, I guess that's sort of an interesting topic in our country these days.
Yes, right now it certainly is.
yes. Most of the immigrants that are working as caregivers are actually U.S. citizens, but not all. There's an immigration education center in Albuquerque, New Mexico, where they teach all their caregiving classes in Spanish, and all of the students are immigrants, mostly from Mexico. And everyone who passes the course becomes a state-certified home health aide. But many are there because of the Family Reunification Act, because they have U.S.-born children. So what are changing immigration laws are going to do to that flow of immigrants who are eager to enter the caregiving profession? I don't know. I mean, it may squash the idea of reversing our shortage by hiring immigrants.
Right. That, well, I guess we'll find out in the next couple of years how that goes. Things are certainly,
I guess we will,
a little ominous around this country lately.
I know. And, you know, and until recently in Canada, they had a live-in caregiver program that immigrants apply for, and it was a path toward permanent residency for them. And when I first saw that, I thought, you know, that's really cool. I wonder if we could try something like that in this country. However, I found out recently that it was discontinued. There were definitely some success stories, for sure, no question. But they also found that because these caregivers were live-in and so living with their employers, many of the immigrants were made to work long hours without being paid appropriately for it. So they ended up ultimately continuing.
That is such an abuse in any live-in situation for immigrants, that they don't know the system, they don't know the rules, they feel very vulnerable, and people abuse that lack of knowledge and lack of protection.
That's right.
Yeah, that's too bad. That's always too bad when that happens, and it can be, it's so sad for the people involved. On another tack that is more of a way to administer the kind of caregiving training and an organization that caregivers themselves might want, you had once told me about caregiver co-ops, which I think is a fascinating new development. Can you talk to us about that?
Sure. You know, that's a new trend that's starting to gain popularity across the U.S., and I just think it's amazing. These are employee-owned and operated agencies that typically get born out of the frustration that caregivers suffer in traditional settings where they have no power, no voice, no support, and no respect. So these co-ops are turning that around. The caregivers gain a strong voice. They have the opportunity to get involved in the daily operations of the business. They're involved in the decision-making at the co-op. The co-ops offer better pay, offer benefits, in-depth training, and stability. And, these are all things, of course, that caregivers are craving.
Of course. Are they finding that they're growing and getting a solid group going in comparison with the for-profit or the nonprofit associations in their area?
I mean, I think to date, the most successful ones have had some, have benefited from some outside financial support. Mm-hmm. For example, the AARP Foundation has funded several caregiving co-ops throughout the country. And other co-ops have been given grants by the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Cooperative Development Foundation. So it's a little early to predict whether we can really curb the shortage by using caregiver co-ops. Mm-hmm. But it's clear that they have the potential to, you know, cause caregivers to really stick around, stick with the profession.
And change it. They're probably going to become a great motivation towards increased training and increasing respect, which is what they want and what they deserve, what they absolutely deserve.
Right. And decreased turnover. You know, there's the largest co-op is located in the Bronx, the Cooperative Home Care Associates, and they have 2,300 caregivers.
Wow.
And they have, you know, competitive wages, regular hours, and family health care insurance. And their turnover rate is 15%, which is a far cry from the national average of 67%.
Wow. Wow. That is huge difference.
It is huge. It really is.
Wow. And how long have they been around?
Golly, I don't know precisely. They were, I think, one of the first. So I'm thinking around 5 years, but I'm not sure.
That just goes to show you how self-fulfilling these prophecies can be when people say we don't want to invest because people don't see this as a long-term commitment and we don't want to invest in training them. If you actually invest, they will see it as a long-term place to stay. It's just the nature of the game.
Exactly.
So give them a reason to stay. Give them a reason to commit to working with you. So,
right.
Linda, thank you so much for sharing your insights with us. This has just been an amazing education for me, and I hope for everyone listening. For those who are listening, please visit knowingmore.com to learn more about Linda's work with In the Know Caregiver Training. And to repeat, Linda is the founder and CEO of In the Know Caregiver Training. She was recognized, she recognized that there was a void about training options for direct care workers. So she took her experience in acute and post-acute nursing care, combined it with her clinical educator experience, which was part of her background, and created In the Know specifically to address that need. Linda's passion for caregiver education makes In the Know the leader in professionally prepared caregiver training. Linda, thank you so much. I always love talking with you. Thank you for coming on the show. And for everyone listening, I'm Jennifer Michelle with MichelleMarketingStrategies.com, where I specialize in helping healthcare IT and provider organizations to get more leads and grow their companies. Catch you next time.